Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Attention, collectors of vinyl. Have you ever gone into a record store and felt overwhelmed by all the unfamiliar options? Are you frustrated by the constantly increasing prices of classic rock staples? Do you avoid streaming music or long for the days when music was recommended to you by a friend instead of an algorithm? If the answer to any of these questions is yes, then check out I'd Buy That for a Dollar, a podcast about inexpensive, common, and underappreciated records that are waiting to be rediscovered. Each week, hosts Sean, Jeremy, and Peter discuss an album and the artist's history. Previous episodes include selections by the Isley Brothers, the Carpenters, the Doobie Brothers, and Donna Summer, among others. Become a bargain bin pro and impress all your friends with cool music trivia. Listen to I'd Buy That for a Dollar wherever you get your podcasts. Please consider supporting Black Women United YEG for the protection and advancement of Black women and girls in Alberta. You can learn more about them at bwunited.ca. They are always looking for donations and volunteers. So please, again, support Black Women United YEG for the protection and advancement of Black women and girls in Alberta. Again, that website is bwunited.ca.
Hi, this is Mark Lee Morrison from the podcast Low Profile. I live in Olympia, Washington with my wife and two daughters, and I support Vish Khanna's creative control on Patreon because I appreciate his journalistic integrity. Vish talks with a lot of artists I care about, and he never asks any boring questions. I love hearing his interviews, and as a Patreon supporter, I get to hear even more of them. If you enjoy creative control too, I implore you to join me as a sustaining contributor.
To make your flexible monthly donation to Creative Control, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol today.
Steph Yates is a musician and multidisciplinary artist who currently divides her time between Montreal, Quebec, and Guelph, Ontario. Known for her work in the noisy rock bands Esther Gray and Cupcake Duct Tape, Yates has recently emerged as a solo artist under the name Kotz. Producers Sandro Perry and Scott Merritt worked with Yates to create Disturbing Body, a stunning debut by Kotz that Boiled Records will send into the world on August 11th, 2021. Friends from our days in Ontario, Steph returns to this show to discuss the influence of classical guitar, celestial mechanics, and relationships on Disturbing Body, aloneness versus loneliness, the beautiful, vulnerable videos that have been released for three new singles thus far, how things change or can change in music these days, learning new ways of singing with Sandro Perry and Scott Merritt, future plans, and much more. A part of the Entertainment One Network with the support of listeners like you who follow and subscribe to this podcast and spread the word about it and make flexible monthly donations at patreon.com/creativecontrol with additional support from Blackbird Music, a well-stocked record store with locations in Edmonton and Calgary and friendly staff who will happily help you source special orders for hard-to-find titles, which you can learn more about at blackbird.ca. plus in-kind support from Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton. This is the 625th episode of Creative Control, featuring the wondrous and brilliant Steph Yates of Kotz, with your host, me, Vish Khanna. Hi, Steph. How's it going?
Hi, Vish. It's pretty good. How about you?
Oh, I'm well, thank you. Where in the world are you today?
I am in Wasaga Beach with my folks.
Oh, lovely. I used to go to Wasaga Beach with my folks when I was younger. We went up there a few times. It's nice, isn't it?
I love it, yeah.
Where?
Yeah, I love the beach and the kitschy mini putt.
Oh, yeah, there is a kitschy mini putter up there. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Forgot about that. For those listening from around the world, whereabouts in the world is Wasaga Beach? Can you, I'm not, this isn't a GPS segment necessarily, but just for people wondering where you are.
Sure. It's on Nottawasaga Bay, attached to Georgian Bay. Mm-hmm. And that is about an hour and a half north of Guelph.
Right. Northern Ontario is, or not even the most north, but it's North Ontario?
I don't know that I would call it Northern Ontario, but...
Is it still Southern Ontario? You've gone north. Guelph is Southern Ontario. That's indisputable.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. But this is not... You've gone north, but you're not north.
I think that's true. I think that's fair to say.
But if you were a Toronto, if you were like a bougie Toronto person and you were going to Wasaga Beach, you'd surely tell your friends, heading up to Northern Ontario, right? That's probably what you'd do.
Or you'd just sort of say that more vague thing, going up north.
Going up north. Exactly.
Yeah.
You're going north of where you are. So you're north. Okay. All right. Anyway, that's lovely. I'm glad you've had some time with to do that with your family. How's your family doing?
Thanks. Yeah, they're doing pretty well. We're all double vaxxed.
Oh, nice.
And my brother and his kids are coming up on the weekend and should be pleasant.
Nice. That's great. Now, if I recall correctly, you've been on this show a couple of times before. Do you have any recollection of talking to me in the past?
Yes, I believe you're right. Twice.
Yeah.
That's what I remember, too.
Yeah. So I think the first time we probably talked about your band, Esther Gray.
Yes.
The second time we talked about Cupcake Duct Tape.
Yes.
Now you're back and you have another new name. But this is mostly... The other things were collaborative things that you kind of helped helm. This is you, right?
Yeah.
Okay. This doesn't do anybody a disservice by describing it this way. I can tell you're being diplomatic.
Am I?
No, you're not. No, sorry. It's my inclination is to be diplomatic. So not to, diminish anyone else's role in a project. Well, a lot of projects.
Course.
Yeah, that's all I was getting at. But Kotz is actually on that level. Kotz is a collaborative expression because you worked with some really cool people. So let's get into all of this together, because Kotz, my main distinction there was the previous entities we talked about were a little loud, or quite loud, depending on the song and the circumstance. Kotz is not loud. So let's start there. How did Kotz come about from your conception?
Well, some of these songs I began writing probably 5 or 6 years ago, and they didn't seem to fit with the other groups I was in at the time that I was writing for. So they got shelved or tucked away. And I tend to write in fragments and then circle back. And so in 2018, when my other projects had really quieted down, I spent some concerted effort finishing these songs and composing some new songs and trying to flesh out a record, something, you know, a set of songs that I could put forward and work on in that way.
Okay, so you're saying 2018. So as we're speaking, 3 years ago, it dawned on you that this could be something to explore. May I ask why the other projects slowed down, per se? Because they did have, particularly, I think, towards Cupcake Duct Tape was the band that had really been still going, maybe more so than Esther Gray. Am I misspeaking?
No, I would say Esther quieted down before Cupcake did.
Right. So quieting down is an interesting choice of words here. Because literally these were, as I suggested, these were really loud bands. Is that an unfair assessment? Would you agree those were loud bands?
Yeah, I would say they were noisy.
Noisy. Noisy is a better word. Yes. That is, you are great at words. Noisy is better to me. Okay, so there were noisy bands. They literally quieted down. And then you quieted down. Was there something about that mode of expression that you wanted to kind of not get away from? That sounds too deliberate and harsh. But I would think that after making music in such noisy bands, it's like when you're in a band and on tour. I often, and in my own experience, sometimes when you get back in the van after you've played a show, sometimes you don't even turn the radio on. You just want that stillness. Was there any of that notion informing your choice to kind of go in this Kotz direction?
I wouldn't say there was to begin with. And it wasn't the plan for those projects to die out necessarily. And I still have an interest in making noisier music, but it does seem to suit me right now. And I mean, towards the end of 2018, I sustained a concussion.
Oh, yes.
And most certainly following that, I tried to avoid noisiness. And so this seemed very suitable music for me to be exploring.
Yes, absolutely. I remember the concussion because sometimes I would say, hey, Steph, do you want to go see a show? I have an extra ticket now. It was always last minute. I'm sorry about those. But I was like, who is cool that would go with me to Toronto at the last minute? You know, and I thought you would want to go, but you would, I forgot, you that concussion really waylaid you, didn't it? Like you couldn't really do much.
No, it dragged on. It was it can be a really mercurial condition that comes and goes. Sometimes I'd feel just like myself again and then do a little bit too much, whether it was work on the computer or, you know, just too much energetic activity or cognitive activity, and I would have a setback and be sort of exhausted and nauseous and all these things.
Just to jump in here, though, because I made I made it seem like the concussion was the main reason that you didn't want to hang out with me. Was that the case, or was that a convenient excuse for you to be like, no, I don't want to go to a show with you, you loser? Like, what was your feeling when I would...
No, I thought it was those were very kind invitations, and I appreciated them very much.
Just a little ego, you know, gratification for me there. Yeah, I just needed it, because I realized I sounded like, that must have been why, when really you could have been like, I don't want to go to anything with him. Anyway, my point is this. Should we dwell on this concussion enough to just ask, for curiosity, I don't want to get too personal, but is it worth talking about how you sustained it? And because there's a lot of concussion stuff in the air. This sounds like a horrible thing, and it also sounds like I hang out with people who are accident prone. But my wife is actually, I don't know how much I'm supposed to talk about it, but she works in publishing, so she gets pitches from people, and there's been a lot of concussion dialogue. People wanting to talk about the condition of, particularly women. Women, I don't know what the percentages are. I don't know if you've done any research on this, but one of the things she's working on is a book just from women's perspectives on suffering concussions. And I thought that was rather fascinating. You and at least one other person I know in Guelph identify as women have had concussions. So I heard a lot about what that was like. Anyway, sorry. Do you want to just briefly address anything I just said or talk a little bit about how you sustained the thing?
Very briefly, I was a pretty avid cyclist, and a FedEx truck turned into me.
Oh, no.
And it didn't seem so bad at first, but it's really stuck around. And one of the a common side effect that comes out of a concussion is depression. And
oh,
I've been sort of working through, you know, managing depression since then.
Okay.
Yeah.
I appreciate your candor there, and I don't want to dwell too much more into it, just out of respect for you. But I'm sorry to hear that as a friend.
Thanks.
That's sad. Did any of that... So we've kind of talked about how that experience may have sort of led you into making quieter music just because of the volume. But is that too direct a line?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I was tuning into the work in this sort of world that became COTS prior to the collision. So I was already focused on it.
Okay.
And it just seemed then lucky, I guess, that that I was doing quiet music in a time when that's what I needed.
The album is called Disturbing Body. So there's some stuff obviously going. I mean, I'll let you talk about it because I know it's not as literal. My sense anyway from the songs is that it's not literally necessarily about human bodies. But I know that that notion of bodily behavior, I guess, runs throughout the, from what I can tell anyway, throughout the songs. Did the experience of having a concussion and having this experience with your body, you know, not behaving the way it used to for an extended period of time, did that inform any of the songwriting here?
I would say no, because these songs, I believe they were all composed prior to the collision. I mean, I might have tied up some loose ends afterward. So I would say no.
Not at all. Okay. So all of these songs were written prior to this collision, prior to the concussion. What do you want to say about this overall, I don't want to say concept unless you agree that the disturbing body, I mean, when you title something, you've kind of conceptualized something, right?
Right.
If you've created a project and you give it a title, there is some conceptual framework where, what does the term disturbing body mean to you and what might it mean to us in this context?
Sure. It's a term that comes from celestial mechanics, and it does refer to a celestial body that pulls another in its orbit, in its course. Mm. And so when I first heard that term, I was really struck by it. It seemed really loaded to me and strange to me. And I thought how human bodies are like celestial ones in the same way that we influence each other in these invisible ways, and where we go in life is affected by our attraction and pull towards other people.
That's some heady stuff, if I might say. It's a kind of a cosmological take on how we interact and how we exist in the universe as a planet, even maybe. Where did this fascination with this notion of push and pull, I suppose, where did that come from for you specifically? Do you have a sense of that?
No, I don't really have a sense for where that interest came from, but I am interested in it. I am interested in the way we influence each other. And I mean, it can seem that we make decisions on our own, but certainly there are many forces at work acting on us that cause us to make the choices that we do. I mean, it's not like I'm studying this field or anything, but I'm curious about it.
Aren't all of us who engage in relationships studying this field, per se?
That might be, Vish, yeah. That very well could be true, yeah.
I mean, I make a conversation podcast where I'm always talking to different people from around the world about where they're at, what they're doing. In a sense, they are, well, I mean, in some cases, they're not fleeting relationships for me. Sometimes there's a rapport and you stay in touch and maybe you talk again in an official or in unofficial capacity. But I think sometimes that I'm trying to, by doing this work, that I'm trying to learn about myself and I'm trying to learn about other people,
mm-hmm.
and how they function can dictate how I function or can mm-hmm. contemplate functioning differently. Do you find in your work as an artist that part of what you're doing is trying to kind of get at a understanding, general as it might be, but an understanding of different behavior, human behavior, feelings, like just the emotions and things we do? Like, is that part of your, not your process, but is that maybe even subtly something you're potentially exploring?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. You summed it up very nicely.
I was kind of fumbling and mumbling, I thought, but thank you. I appreciate that. I appreciate you saying that. What is your, I mean, we're all fascinated with relationships. Is there anything in your, about you and your experience in relationships that may have sort of triggered this idea of like, what is this? What are we doing? Why do I interact with people this way? Why do I have a partner sometimes and sometimes I don't? Like, was any of that kind of circling around?
Well, I didn't sit down to write the record with an overarching theme in mind. It was a collection of songs that seemed to start to fit together as I worked around them and worked with them. And writing a song lyrically can sometimes feel like just feeling around in the dark. It's not, I don't necessarily sit down to write a song about something in a very intentional, clear-sighted way. I mean, the things that I'm interested in will inform the work that I do, and it's not always a straight line between what I'm exploring and what I end up making something.
Right.
Yeah.
You start with an idea and then it goes wherever it goes.
Right.
In terms of lyrics. Okay. So that makes sense to me. Do you, now that, I mean, as we're speaking, this record we're talking about is going to be, when is it out again?
August 11th.
August 11th. So we have a little bit of time. One of the reasons we're speaking is because you're participating in the Hillside Festival, and I want to talk about that in a bit. But sorry, one of the reasons we're speaking so early, or one of the reasons people are hearing us speak so early, let me put it that way. I'm all jumbled up, Steph. I've done so many interviews. They're all in the can. You know, a lot of them are just saved from like months ago, and I'm trying to get them out into the world, but I end up like, the other day, I posted an episode in June that I recorded like in early March, and it held up. I was happy. You know, there was some discussion about snow and cold, but I mean, overall, I think it held up. Yeah, but I'm sorry, this is just from the people listening, so they understand what temporal strife I go through every day with this show, you know, and when to put stuff out. But as we're speaking, we're having a chat, and the one that people are hearing, we've conducted relatively recently. Man, the fourth wall really came down there.
That's
for
right.
Anyway, sorry. The record isn't quite out, so you haven't had the experience of a large amount of people beyond your circle of friends and collaborators, whether they're business associates or musicians, haven't had to receive it, process it, give you something to think about, you know, like, oh, that's what you took from that song? Like that. Have you had that experience with your other work where you put something, you think it's one thing, maybe quietly, you know, it's open to interpretation, but that someone says, that book you made or that art you made, oh, it makes me think this. Have you been surprised by the way your work has been received ever?
Yeah, I'm not sure I can think of a specific example, but I do love it when that happens.
Yeah.
And I think that, I wouldn't want to take that away from someone by spelling it all out too much for them.
Yeah. Okay. I get the hint. I get what you're saying there. We're not going to spill the beans here. That's fair. But having, you know, put the record through its manufacturing process now, if you will, you've kind of had to let go of it. It is what it's going to be, at least in terms of its physical format. You could always, these days, isn't that weird that you can change a song digitally? Like you could. You could be like, you know what? That thing I put on Bandcamp, I didn't like it. I'm gonna add a trumpet. You know, you could do that. Have you ever thought of that? That's a weird thing we do now.
I guess that's true. I guess I did that once.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, there. This old cassette release that Esther Gray did, it was online on Bandcamp. And there was an alternate version of one of the songs that we never really got it right. I never really liked it, but I'd felt compelled to have this version on the tape.
Yeah.
And at one point I just decided, oh, forget that. I'm going to just swap it out with the version that I like. And I just did. And
yeah. So you can do that now. Isn't that a weird thing? You can totally mess with people's minds.
As far as I know, nobody noticed.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
This came to the fore for me when Kanye West put out that Life of Pablo album, and the reports were that listeners started to notice that he was changing the songs without telling anyone. And, you know, at that point, he was on the decline in terms of him being endearing, but I thought it was kind of endearing and interesting that, you know,
yeah.
I interviewed Chris Novoselic from Nirvana in like 2013, and they redid In Utero. He had the idea after hearing like a Doors Greatest Hits album. And what they had done with the master tapes is they redid everything. So the guitar solo that was really low in the mix or erased from the final mix, put the fader up. So that version of In Utero that came out in 2013, if you got the fresh mixes, totally different listening experience for the exact same song.
Wow.
And anyway, sorry, this is a bit of a tangent, but it's quite a tangent. I'm gonna double back and say this is a huge tangent from where I was coming from when I started this line of questioning. But
as a child, I fantasized about a CD that would start to change, you know, after maybe 100 listens.
Oh, that's fascinating. As a child?
And as a young, you know, listener, when I was young and starting to listen keenly and had maybe listened to a No Doubt album 100 times and then thought, wouldn't it be amazing if it started to change as I listened to it, you know, or I heard something new.
Yeah.
Something new appeared, you know. Anyway, I guess that happens now on the internet.
Well, it can. On the one hand, I think it's a glorious time. What a time to be alive if you're an artist and this is what you can do with this ephemeral version of your art. However, many artists I know, and I don't know if you count yourself among them, are sensitive perfectionists. They have trouble letting go and making that final decision like, yes, the record is mastered and it is done. There's always that. Have you had that? I always have it. In the times I made records, you listen back. You've gone through this strenuous process of vetting the thing, but then when it's finally out, that's when you have the regret. like when you finally said yes, and you know that people are... Have you ever had that, where you kind of regret the thing you put out? I mean, you mentioned the Esther Gray example, but is there any other thing?
No. Acutely. Okay. I think that sometimes I can listen back to something old and think of how I would do it differently if it were in front of me right now. But for the most part, I'm okay with how things are. But I do have trouble finishing things, declaring them finished. So it's hard to get to that point. And I found it immensely helpful to have other people involved in the process of making this record. I could really feel the psychological support in that, getting to that point of declaring it finished.
Yeah. Well, we'll get to those people in a moment, but I started this bizarre but interesting fruitful tangent. Let's call this a fruitful tangent. Is that okay with you? Are you okay with
it's
that?
It's fine. Yeah.
So what I was getting at there was you have had to let go of this record. Do you have, and again, people will hear it, they'll have their interpretations of what's going on. Do you have a sense now that you've let go of it in this regard? Do you have like perspective on it, on what you might have been going through at the time of the conception of these songs? Does any of that come to the fore at all? Do you have a sense of where you were kind of at and what this might mean to Steph Yates?
This being the record is out.
No, the record in terms of you were talking about the lyrics earlier, and I want to stick to that because I think sonically that's a whole other conversation, and I think that's when we can maybe bring in the collaborators and everyone else. I'm specifically wondering about it as from your perspective as a lyricist. Because sometimes you don't know what's... Until a thing is done and the batch of songs that you've collected is complete. Like you've decided this is the collection of this expression. Like this, you know what I'm saying? Like then you're kind of like, oh, interesting. Like I'm thinking about the lyrics more. I'm singing them. What the hell? Where did that come from? And then you kind of think, mm-hmm. Do you know where I'm coming from? Does that make sense?
Yeah. I think they are a set of lonely songs, but not, or aloneness is maybe a word that comes a bit closer. It's something like having known closeness and having let go of it or lost it. There's some part of that is woven through the record quite a bit.
Isolation, alienation, these sorts of things.
Well, it's not necessarily always a bad thing. It's not always it can be tinged with melancholy, but not sad.
Yeah.
I think of the songs as, I think there is a spirit of independence there and, you know, the observer who is paying attention to what's happening internally while undergoing emotional experiences.
Well, you are someone who often has traveled on your own, right?
That's true, yeah.
You've explored different parts of the world with just, and you meet the people you meet kind of thing, right?
Right.
Yeah. So you've this is maybe a marker or an extension of that independent spirit. I really like what you're saying there, that isolation or loneliness, being alone and loneliness are two different things.
Right.
I think you're saying that being alone is good. It can be good. It can be fine. It can be fine to be on your own and navigating whatever the day brings. You know, I go back to the thing where I invited you to some concerts. Every time you said no, I would, or whatever, like events or whatever, I would go by myself. And I often, because I was older in Guelph, I had some friends who were my age and we're all parents, but I would find ways to sneak away to Toronto, often by myself, because I couldn't think of anyone who would be available. They got work in the morning, they got this, they're that. And I would kind of try to make a point of going to see something I was interested in. And I did it by myself. And to be honest, on some level, I liked it. Like, do you like? Because I didn't have to like, oh, I got to, sorry, you know, you have to, this sounds selfish. I don't mean to sound selfish, but I like the idea of just like, I don't have to wait for anyone. They have to go to the bathroom. They have to eat a snack. I can do those things.
You don't have to explain yourself to anyone either. If the construction site across the street catches your eye and you want to go look at it a little bit, you don't have to feel like you need to give someone an explanation.
Exactly. So does that make us, I gather you relate to what I'm saying?
Yeah, I relate. Yeah.
And you value that bit of you value your independence.
Yeah, I would of course be lonely sometimes traveling alone, and then sometimes it feels just wonderful. I feel so free. So it's not like it's always easy.
No.
But there are of course all those benefits you just described.
But I would argue that, and by the way, you weren't the only person I would ask sometimes. It's just the inclination for me was to invite someone to come along. And sometimes it would work. Sometimes people were up for it and we would go on this little adventure. And sometimes it just because of part of my thing, I will just to be frank, like sometimes I wouldn't know I had the extra ticket until the day of the show. Often with guest lists and things like that. Sorry, this makes me sound like I'm some special dude. I'm on the guest list. I just the nature of my work is they're like, hey, yes, you're a media person. We can squeeze you into this sold out show plus one.
You're very special, Vish.
No, this is not what I'm trying to say. Well, my point is that I was trying to share the specialness with my friends, and sometimes it would work and sometimes it wouldn't. But my inclination was to ask someone to come with me. I'm just trying to counter the potentially misanthropic notion I was putting forth earlier about how I don't need anyone holding me back. I can just do my thing. I would ask people, like socially I was interested in hanging out, but then if no one could go and I would go by myself, kind of liked it, didn't mind it. So I think you are maybe, you're kind of getting at that a little bit with some of these songs, exploring what it's like to be an independent person, but knowing that you're going to be drawn to other people at some point. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, I think we've covered the master's thesis components of the interview for the most part. However, before we get to the collaborators and the sonics of this record, which I find very fascinating, you have made a few videos in the lead up to this album coming out, and I do think they're worth discussing. Would you agree?
Sure, yeah.
Okay, they're very artful videos. Is there three videos currently?
Yeah, three videos with collaborators. Natalie Logan, she did the video for Disturbing Body. Mm. Patrick Cruz did the video for Bitter Part of the Fruit. And Yula Benevolsky did the video for Flowers.
Nice. Thank you for crediting them. Now, how would you, because I feel like there's a conceptual thread running through the videos. The videos, I think, have some similarities or enough similarities and enough a sense of narrative cohesion that I feel like the videos themselves are sort of connected. Is that wrong? I mean, it can't be wrong. It's a thing I said. It could be wrong. It could be right. But does that make sense to you?
Well, sure. Yeah. I mean, my body appears in two of them, and I never thought I would appear in a bikini in a music video in my whole life. But I worked with these two women directors that I trusted, and they had ideas, and I thought, it's just a body. And so we saw their ideas through, and I really am really happy with how they turned out. Patrick's video is it's very lush watercolor that's mm-hmm. been digitally cut out and animated, and he just had free reign to explore and animate, and that one may be a little less, but do you see a connection?
Well, yes, that one is a bit more of an anomaly in that you're not in it, right?
Right.
So the ones that I guess, yeah, that's a good point, and I'm sorry if I've conflated the three in that sense. I think they are obviously united by your voice and your expression, but the two that feature your body seem to be connected to this concept of, well, not a disturbing body, but the notion that you're exploring the body on some level. And it's interesting, you kind of described it almost objectively, like, I never thought I'd see myself in a video in this way. Like, it's almost like an out-of-body, sorry, no pun intended, but it's almost like an it's almost like an out-of-disturbing body experience. Man, I really didn't intend the pun, and then I went whole hog, sorry. But there's some... Is that pedestrian to connect the album title with what you're doing in those videos?
No.
No, okay.
No, I don't think so. I think that's what makes the term so arresting, that it, you know, it's used in a field that's totally divorced of the human form, but that word is what conjures. I mean, the first thing when I hear body, I don't think of a planet first. I think of a human.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right. So putting yourself in there, I mean, in some cases people hire actors or actresses or models to represent the ideas, but you I think it takes a certain amount of confidence, or as some people might say, chutzpah, to put yourself in a situation where you and your mostly bare body are present. Does that speak to something about any kind of confidence you now have that you didn't before about, you know, like, here, it's just a body. It's that's what you said earlier. It's just a body. You didn't say, it's just my body. It's just a body. So,
well, yeah, I have a body, and I needed a body for the video. Well, I have one.
It was handy. Well, it was convenient.
I mean, it's on one part, yes, I embraced the role and I felt vulnerable both times, but I felt trust for the directors. And also, I mean, on the other hand, these were low to no budget videos. I mean, I could have pinched some pennies and hired somebody, but I just sort of I'm used to using what I have.
And I'm sorry for even suggesting that you would need to. I'm bashful. myself.
No. Yeah, right.
I couldn't do what you've done here. And so I think it takes a lot of confidence to do what you did in these very artfully made videos. Like I sense that you're comfortable somehow, even though you're being very vulnerable. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
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 Are you a good swimmer?
Yeah.
I can't swim.
Oh.
I'm not buoyant. Like that. The other thing.
I'm very buoyant. Yeah.
The disturbing body video disturbed me because I was like, I have a fear of the water. So you spend almost the entirety of it, as I recall, underwater and filmed right. underwater. I'd be like panicking. Sorry, this is more about me than you need to know. But I'm just saying, the bravery involved, was that hard to do, to be in the water for that long?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it was. And I loved it. You know, I felt I hadn't swam underwater in years because my ears would sometimes close up, so I had stopped. But yeah. As a kid, I loved diving. I loved diving and collecting things up off the bottom of the pool. Mm. And I felt like I was learning how to move under the water again. Like it was sort of dance like being under there and feeling that weightlessness, and it really was a lot of time underwater.
Yeah,
you know, to make that video. Yeah,
yeah, I got the same feeling from watching the disturbing body video as I got from the first time I saw the movie Jaws. Just sort of like captivated but afraid. Does that make sense?
That's what we were going for.
Yeah, good job. Beautiful. They're beautiful videos. And where can people see those, by the way? I know they're on YouTube. That's where I saw them. But is there like a channel or whatever?
That is a good question. I know that Boiled Records hosts the Flowers one, and then Natalie Logan hosts the Disturbing Body one. But
okay.
I think if you search for them, they should eventually appear.
Sorry, I didn't mean to get too promotional, but I'll embed those in the primary post for this podcast if anyone's interested in watching at least one or two of them. Should we talk just before we leave this, the Flowers video, dry land, but again,
that's right.
But again, a certain level of great level of vulnerability. Was that easier in any way or more difficult than the previous video?
It was more difficult. It was a much shorter shoot, but I felt very naked and I had to lie very still for a long time, and people glued flower petals to me over several hours and I came back to life.
Yeah. There's a death thing happening there. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it has it's also a bit disturbing. I think if you combine the Flowers video with the Disturbing Body video, you have the movie Jaws. That's it. Someone's in the water, then they're dead. That's what Jaws is. If anyone, spoiler alert, that's what the movie Jaws... Have you ever seen Jaws, Steph?
It's been a long time, but yeah.
It's like my favorite movie. I like Jaws and The Godfather. They're different movies, obviously, for many, many reasons, but those are my like two... I just watched it a few months ago. I have it on... Turns out I have Jaws on Blu-ray. I don't even remember, but it makes sense. It's my favorite movie. Anyway,
right.
Enough about the water. I applaud you for your boldness and bravery in those, and the beauty of those videos. Like, they're really lovely. So, as I say, I hope people check them out. Let's get to the sound of Disturbing Body. My wife and I have been listening to your record in the kitchen, among other places. Like, I've been playing the record throughout the house. And so the other day, my wife's like, this sounds like something, but I don't know what it is. I'm like, well, that's what most music kind of is. But stylistically, how would you characterize the tone here? I think in the biographical information, there's been some obvious allusions to bossa nova, or I don't know, French chanteuse music has been invoked. But what is your take? Where did this sound come from for you?
That's, I guess, not a straightforward question for me. Where did it come from?
Were there any particular, again, just going back to what we were discussing earlier about some of your other bands, we can agree this is quite a departure from those sounds. I've seen you on Instagram with a classical guitar. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so when I heard these songs for the first time, I'm like, oh, this is kind of what Steph has been working on or rather showcasing, I suppose, in little Instagram clips. So there's something, was it the guitar that, is it as simple as that? Was it just exploring the classical guitar more?
Oh, I see. Yeah, I think it was spending more time with the classical guitar. And I've had one around since I was a teenager, kind of thing. So my last year of high school, I got a classical guitar teacher just for, I don't know, half a year or something. And so then would play off and on just as a quiet bedroom sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so spending more time at the dining room table with the classical guitar instead of in a jam space with an electric guitar.
Yeah.
So that seems to be where they came from physically.
Yeah. When you have an instrument that's a little more accessible and less disturbing to others, you end up fooling around with it more, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it suits the gentleness of the music. So, okay, that explains that. And fundamentally, do each of these songs, I'm trying to think, do they all feature that kind of, that guitar sound?
That's my primary instrument on this record. There is a song that was originally written on the nylon string, but we used an electric guitar with pretty spare power chords on the record.
Okay, okay. And Disturbing Body is primarily piano-based?
I mean, it's there's my simple strumming in song,
okay.
And then there is, some piano
and
bass and percussion.
Yeah. So, let's talk about the instrument. We talked a little bit about the instrumentation. You worked with a couple of very great collaborators, people I respect a lot in terms of the engineering and the production. Do you want to talk about them at all, or do you wish... to erase their names from history. No, that sounded very harsh.
No, I would happily talk about them. So Sandro Perry produced the record and mixed it, and Scott Merritt engineered it, and they were lovely people to work with.
They seem to me, and I've worked with Scott before, and making a record, and he was pretty low-key and encouraging, but also hung back. I can maybe see Sandro being sort of the same way. Was it did they bring things to the party, so to speak, that to these songs specifically that surprised you or altered them in any particular way?
Yeah, definitely. One of the things that Sandro discussed with me in pre-production was my vocal approach. And up to that point, I didn't know that I had a vocal approach, really. And I think that my perspective was, I want to sing the song the way the song wants to be sung. And in some cases, that means more of a warble or singing it softer or straighter. And I had been doing quite a bit of voice work on my own. Some of the songs I would write instrumental parts to that I would then sing, but make my voice sound a little bit more like a different instrument. And so some of that was bleeding into my lyrical delivery as well in certain cases. So I felt like I was confronted with something of a identity crisis as a singer suddenly. You know, I'm being asked a question that I hadn't thought of. And Sandro suggested that I approach the songs in as plain a way as possible. And some songs that was a lot harder to do than I realized. And in the sessions, we would, you know, talk after a take, and maybe Sandro would ask me to try it again, but even plainer. And there was a song, I think it was Flowers. In fact, Scott Merritt said, when you deliver it like that, it appears to me more as a poem. And So I kind of carried that with me through the song. I tried to sing very, what's the word? Not legibly, but to enunciate, you know, so that I could be understood.
Just for my own clarification, when Scott made that comment, was that, I don't want to say, was that a criticism? Was he suggesting that you try, that wasn't the approach the song needed?
No. I think that he, I mean, I found it a really lovely thing to say. And I thought that that was...
Oh, he was complimenting you. He wasn't suggest. I guess if I were to hear that, based on not hearing your take on the take that he's talking about, I would assume that you delivered the lines almost as if you were reciting poetry. But what you're saying is he was complimenting you on the phrasing.
Well, the phrasing, but also, you know, the delivery more broadly.
Right.
And okay. I think as I made my voice plainer, the words were able to appear more clearly.
Huh.
And as opposed to, say, I'm like sort of pinching my voice a bit to make it sound more like a clarinet. And then it's like it takes on the instrumentation of the sort of sonic quality of the voice. The tone maybe starts to take precedence over the delivery of the poem of the song,
right,
that kind of
thing. Right.
Yeah.
Okay. If I might say, and I don't mean to gush or embarrass you, but I think you actually have such a lovely speaking voice that...
Oh, gosh.
Well, I say this coming from the perspective who I sound like a Muppet, and I have to edit my voice every week. Like, I mean, I have to edit this audio that I do every week. So I've made peace with my Muppet voice, you know, as someone who speaks a lot. But no, as you're describing what Scott's perception was and this experience you had, it just dawned on me like, yeah, you sound like you have a lovely speaking voice. So that would suggest to me that it makes sense to me that you would apply, like when you say plainer, that's where I'm kind of hung up. I feel like they're asking you to sort of apply less of a sing-songy voice because you have, is that wrong?
Well, sing-song, it's just that it's like maybe a certain affect would appear sometimes. Like,
right.
And it's hard to, it's not like I had a consistent approach to that. It's like I was saying, maybe a certain song wants to be sung a different way, and I'm just feeling it out.
Yeah.
But it wasn't a consistent approach, and... I mean, one of the notes that Sandro had for me was that there might be a moment where he would catch an affect that would land somewhere and it would jar him out of the connection to the, you know, the intimate space of the record, that kind of thing.
Well, I mean, what a great gift for you to have these two very seasoned people.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's excellent that you connected with, of all the people you could connect with, like, that's great. It's great to me because I hear Sandro's, some of his aesthetic influence here and there. I think you worked with some of the players that he often works with, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So I could, that he's, you know, I'm not saying he's got a Stax thing going on there, but he does. He has when he works with certain people, he works with them and gets a certain sound. And I don't think you are getting that sound per se, but at the same time, I hear it. I hear an extension of his universe.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I think that's cool. Well, Steph, we've covered a lot of ground here, I hope. Probably a little bit more of my neuroses in this one than there needed to be. But is there anything more you want to say about the record before we get into the kind of the promotional stuff? I want to give you an opportunity to talk about, you know, where people can find the record and all those sorts of things. Oh, and then I did say that you're playing Hillside. So if we want to talk about that performance, maybe we could do that too. But in terms of, you know, themes, concepts, anything we missed, is there anything more you want to say about Disturbing Body? I just want to give you the space.
Nothing comes to the forefront of my mind at the moment, but... You know, the players that we did bring in to work on the record each brought something so special. And there was a lot of room in Sandro's arrangements for improvisation And I'm just so grateful for what these musicians contributed.
Okay. Well,
yeah,
that's a lovely sentiment there. So I appreciate that. And I hope this was sort of enjoyable. Is this one of the first interviews you've done about the record?
Yeah, it is. And definitely it's been enjoyable.
Okay. Just making sure. Neuroses. Did I mention the Neuroses? Yeah, I have that. So let's talk about the Hillside thing, which is coming up. This is, I believe, did you do like a pre-recorded performance?
Yeah, with the Hillside Tech team there.
And how was that? Did you play with collaborators or was it just you?
I just played solo, and it was my first performance since the start of the pandemic, but there was no audience to riff with, you know, banter. I didn't do any banter because I thought I didn't think it would work if there was no audience, you know.
It would be hilarious to me if every once in a while you were like, where did you shoot this? In Guelph? You probably shot it in Guelph, I'm guessing. Yeah. So it would be hilarious to me if you were like, what's going on, Guelph? And just nothing. Nothing comes back. How's everybody doing? Nothing. That would be funny. I should have been there to direct. No, I'm just kidding. You've performed a lot. I've seen you perform music a lot. Do you miss performing live?
I really do. And I mean, I felt pretty out of my element for this pre-recorded thing. Just not having performed in a long time, you feel out of practice for the real thing kind of thing. And I miss playing live. I miss going to shows very much.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, people can check out this Hillside performance the weekend of July 23rd to 25th. And I think after that, it's kind of gone. So you have to, hopefully people are hearing this in time. And you can learn more about it at hillsidefestival.ca, right? I think that's correct.
That sounds good.
Sounds like it's correct. So that's good enough for you, I think, and me. I think that's correct. I'll link to things, of course. But there was something that came out recently that suggested you are Montreal/Guelph's COTS. So where do you, and I, you know, normally when I say, where in the world are you? Someone's like, I'm at home. Here's how it's going. Where are you living these days, per se? Where do you consider home these days, Steph?
I'm back in Guelph for the moment, but the plan is to be back in Montreal next year.
Okay.
I was in Montreal for the winter. It was a hard winter.
Montreal winters are hard. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm a little bit limbo-ish, but Guelph, I've stopped in Guelph for the moment. Yeah.
I've been doing a dumb thing where I ask someone from Guelph how Guelph's doing, and of course, what are they supposed to say? I mean, it's just whatever they've experienced. Some people are like, I haven't left my house. I don't know. What do you want me to say? If I ask you this dumb question, like, and now you're just back, like, what's your, you know, I love Guelph. I miss Guelph. Is there anything you can tell me? Is Guelph doing okay? Is everything all right? I mean, in the grand scheme of things, I know there's a pandemic, but is Guelph okay?
Things are strange, but I think things are getting better, and I think people are hanging in there.
Okay.
And I think Guelph's okay. I think it's okay to say that.
Okay. Just making sure. I like to check in with Guelph people. I've had a few on the show all of a sudden after a long absence of Guelph people. So I've been getting that impression from others as well. So thank you for that. Okay, let's get down to the P.T. Barnum promotional part of the show in terms of telling people where they can learn more about COTS. I didn't even ask you why you're calling your thing COTS. Why isn't it just Steph Yates? What is COTS? What does that mean to you?
I just wanted a little layer of confusion and mystery.
Okay. Well, you've done it.
A cot is a temporary structure, a small narrow bed for a single, you know, a lone traveler, somewhere to rest a weary head and have a daydream. You know, it's a nice, I thought it suited the music.
Yeah. No.
Yeah.
Good. See, I don't normally, I try not to ask dumb questions like, what is your band called that? But COTS is an interesting name. And
If you saw it on a show poster, would you, and you didn't know me, would you think it was a punk band?
I would assume there was a sale at a bedding store. I would assume there was some sort of discount. I'm a bargain hunter, so my mind would immediately revert to, oh, I'm going to save some dough. I need a cot. You know, I got people coming over. No, it's funny because you're an interesting case to ask about this. You were in a band called Esther Gray, and frequently people thought you were Esther Gray, right?
Yeah.
So you like to hide. That seemed almost deliberate. You like the playfulness and the confusion a little bit, right?
Yeah.
You're being very blunt with your answers. Yes. So Kotz is another sort of, there's a little mystification there. It's a solo project for you. And, you know, this is not unusual for people to name their solo work after, hide behind, not hide, that's the wrong word. Give it a name. So you've given it Kotz, plural. Man, I really cracked the code at the end of this episode. Independence, a little bit of alone. There's two Kotz. It's an inviting name.
A series of Kotz. How about that?
Okay, so
a
I'm not.
A string of Kotz.
You could have called it Kot, but there's an inviting notion to Kotz. May I stretch this further?
What?
No, well, that was it. I feel like it's all about being a little bit alone and the gravitational pull between people and planets and whatever. So you even though you're exploring that kind of independent isolation, two beds. There's at least, come on over. I've got at least two cots, not just one. For me, there's at least two. Come on over. You can be in the basement. I'll be upstairs. There's two cots. Is that a weird way to go with it?
I think that your interpretation is just as legitimate as any.
But that is just a pandering pat answer. You can tell me I'm wrong.
I like it that that's not where my mind went, but I like it.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Let's leave it at that because I think we've psychoanalyzed you and your album enough for one day. Why don't we tell people where they can learn more about Kotz and this album, Disturbing Body? Are you capable of doing that?
I think so.
I knew you were going to say that.
Yeah.
I have nothing in front of me. I hope to God. If I were a religious person, which I'm not, I would hope to God. I hope that you know something right now. Just words, URLs.
Okay, here's one. Kotzmusic.bandcamp.com.
There you go.
There you can hear things. You could pre-order a vinyl record if you want. You can even see some of the videos up there if you click on the tracks. That's a thing I just became aware of.
Oh, cool.
So Boiled Records is releasing the record and... Mm-hmm. They've got, so they have their own Bandcamp. They have an Instagram. I have an Instagram, which is, you know, hard to find. So good luck.
Good. Not making it simple. You want to keep it kind of on the down low?
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay. I will do that for you. I will help with that. Okay, so Boiled Records, your Bandcamp page. That's all good. I ordered one copy of it on vinyl. Is it a small run?
Yeah, we're doing a run of 200.
Yeah, so it's very small. Okay, so people want to get at it. Is that the plan? Like, would you do more if you run out?
We'll see okay. What happens. Yeah.
Okay, so I'm lucky. I'm already feeling lucky that I ordered it as soon as you made it available.
And thanks for that.
Oh, yeah, it's the least I can do. Okay. Steph, this has been wonderful. I want to go out on a song from the record. I don't know if you have a idea of maybe picking something that's been circulating already or what have you, but if so, do you mind picking a song? And if so, do you want to explain why you chose it?
Yeah, well, why don't we go with Flowers?
Okay, and why did Flowers come to mind?
Well, I guess because we talked through the video so thoroughly. And it's a sort of somber day here, somber and moody, and maybe that makes me think about death.
Steph, it's somber and moody. You're at the beach.
I know. There's a tornado warning today.
Oh, okay. Plus, I don't know if you've seen the movie Jaws. Beaches aren't always what they are. You know, they're not all they're cracked up to be. Let me just leave it at that. Let's play it for a moody day, I guess. This is Flowers by Kotz from the beautiful, beautiful new album, Disturbing Body. Steph, this was very lovely to chat with you. Thank you for your time and consideration, and I wish you the best of luck with Kotz and everything else in the future.
Thanks so much, Vish.
Flowers on the body dead, the flowers I sent, powder on the eyes of them, they're too young to die. Dying makes a sort of paste, it's good for the eyes. Dying makes a sort of cloud, it broadens the sky.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Oh, very special thanks again to my friend Steph Yates of Kotz for appearing on this, the 625th episode of Creative Control, which is part of the Entertainment One podcast network and available wherever you get your podcasts. If you can't find an episode that you've heard about, you're looking for it, you don't know where it is, or if you want to learn more about me and sign up for my monthly newsletter, please visit my worldwide website, vishkana.com. You can like Creative Control on Facebook or follow the show on Twitter at Vish Creative, or you can follow me on Twitter or on Instagram, or wait, and or Instagram. You can follow me on Twitter and or Instagram at Vish Khanna. I hope I hope that was worth it. Me going back like that, I hope that was worth it. Oh, also, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol to make a flexible monthly donation to sustain this podcast. $6 or more a month grants you access to exclusive content. And if you're interested in receiving a Creative Control t-shirt, please message me on Patreon and I'll get you one while supplies last. They come in maroon and yellow with two different designs, and I still have some. So again, message me on patreon.com/creativecontrol. Thanks again to the fine Alberta record retailer Blackbird Music, which you can learn more about and order stuff from them, I believe, on their website, blackbird.ca. Also, I want to thank Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton for their in-kind support for this show. All of those businesses in Ontario, Canada. So if you're in the area, Guelph or Hamilton, stop by, tell them I sent you. I don't think they'll give you a discount. They might give you an odd look, more than anything. And maybe a free donut? I don't know. I don't know if they all have donuts, but you know what I mean. Go there, tell them I sent you. It'll be fun. For me. And them, probably. Thanks, too, to Jim Guthrie for letting me use music of his on the show. You can learn more about Jim and his wide-ranging world of music at jimguthrie.org. If you visit Jim, tell him I sent you. Just go knock on his door and say, Vish sent me. I want a donut. Finally, thank you for listening to this episode with Steph of COTS. I hope you check out Disturbing Body when the full thing is out in August, and also that you check out these beautiful videos we discussed. And otherwise, yeah, thanks for listening to this episode, maybe checking out older episodes, possibly subscribing to the podcast, telling your friends about the show to help spread the word about it. All of it means a lot to me. I will talk to you very soon. Have a good one. Bye for now.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.